Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In the appendix to his Prolegomena to Any Future Metaphysics, in the last two sections, which are titled A Specimen of a Judgment About the Critique Prior to Its Examination, which is Kant's response to one of his many critics out there, and then in the final section of the work, which is called Proposals as to an Investigation of the Critique Upon Which a Judgment May Follow, Kant is going to provide us some very useful clarifications and reflections on how metaphysics, you could say, fits in with, but also doesn't fit in with, the other sciences, and as he's going to call them, branches of knowledge, or Kenntnisse, right? And when we look at what he's using as examples, not all of these really fit the criterion for what Kant would like to call a science, a Wissenschaft, but we'll just put that aside for the moment. So the first remark that he makes is sort of a side note as he's responding to this critic, and he says that other sciences and branches of knowledge, right, so what we're going to talk about here, have their standard, and really this should be plural, but what he means here is that each of them has its own particular standard, its Maßstab, which quite literally means like a ruler, you know, and if you think about the derivation of this term, this is similar to the Greek kanon, which originally means something like a measuring rod, which could also be made of lead, so it can be wound around things, so like a measuring tape, and then comes to mean, in later use of the language, a criterion, something that we can use to make good judgments. And so what are the examples of disciplines, let's call them, that he's going to bring up? Well, mathematics, history, theology, natural science and medicine, jurisprudence, and then even matters of taste, which is something he's going to talk about in the third critique much later on. So how do these, in fact, have their standards? So he tells us mathematics has its standard in itself. What does that mean? You can understand that to signify that mathematics is kind of a self-enclosed discipline, at least with respect to its main theoretical work. Obviously, it's applied to things in reality, and it provides a basis for other disciplines, as we're going to see. So mathematics is on really, really secure ground. And you know, we remember Kant talked about pure mathematics and its possibility, its actuality, really, and how it works in the first part of the Prolegomena. What about history and theology? Here's where it gets kind of interesting. History and theology have their standard, their Maßstab, in secular or sacred books. Okay, so here Kant is probably playing a little bit fast and loose. If we want to think about history, let's put theology aside for the moment. So is history all about books? Okay, history does use books along with other written documents in order to assemble together whatever picture, whatever narrative it provides us of what has taken place in the past. And I guess you can say that's kind of a standard. You'd like there to be some written sources. But of course, even Kant must have known at that time that sometimes history might in fact be based on oral sources and then you write them down yourself. So, you know, what is exactly is he saying? And then when we move to theology, so this is kind of a common approach to it. It's based on sacred books, the books of, he means, of course, Christian theology, the books of those things that we call the Bible. And by the way, Bible is not originally one single book. It is ta biblia in Greek, which means the books, plural, right? A whole set of writings that have been assembled. And the original Bibles weren't really codexes. They were a bunch of scrolls that you'd carry around in a pouch. And sometimes they'd have more books or less books, you know? So this is a little bit interesting, and we don't have too much time to digress upon this. Let's come to another one. Natural science and the art of medicine, well, what are they based on? So they're based partly on mathematics, but they're also based partly on, as he says, experience. Natural science is science of the things in the world that we can, in fact, perceive, or at least we develop ways of perceiving things that relate to them, right? So that's something there. Medicine is more of an applied discipline. It has to do with the human body, perhaps with the human psyche as well. But it does involve mathematics. It involves measuring things. And there's an experiential side to it as well. So that's its criterion. It's standard. What about jurisprudence? Jurisprudence is more like theology and history in that, as he says, it's based in books of law. So another kind of book, right? So we've got secular books, which could include law books, I suppose, right? Law books and then sacred books. And then he goes on to talk about even matters of taste. Now, isn't this an interesting criterion to give in the examples of the ancients? Did only the ancients provide us with criteria for matters of taste? Kant doesn't believe that. So, you know, maybe there's a little bit of rhetoric going on here. What's the main point? Well, all of these other disciplines, all these other sciences and bodies of knowledge, to whatever degree they actually are knowledge, each of them has its standard. What about metaphysics? And here Kant says something kind of interesting. The standard is yet to be discovered or found for the judgment, but Rutel, of metaphysics, how we should decide what's real metaphysics and what's just nonsense or made up stuff or whatever, you know, the things that he calls school metaphysics. We don't actually have a standard, but we do have a standard. That's exactly what he's been articulating in the Prolegomena and in the Critique of Pure Reason, which his critic had reviewed but didn't sufficiently read, according to Kant. He says, I have made an attempt to determine it, the standard, as well as its use. What is to be done then until it be found when works of this kind have to be judged? If they're of a dogmatic character, then do whatever you like to. No one will play the master over others here for long before someone else appears to deal with him in the same manner. But if they're critical in character, which is what Kant is proposing and advancing, then not indeed with reference to other works, but to reason itself, the standard of judgment cannot be assumed, but has to be sought for. You can't find it in books or in, you know, experiences that we're having or in applying mathematics or something like that. So that's one of the points that he's making there. And moving ahead several pages, in the work, we find that he is going to talk about these different types of science once again. And here he notes something really interesting. Now, it's not a completely new point, but it's getting a little bit more concrete. He's already addressed this in part 3 of the Prolegomena. Mathematics. Now, notice the order here. Mathematics, natural science, laws, arts, and then he adds another one, even morality, moral, right? As he says, do not fill the soul. Now, what does that actually mean? They don't completely fill the soul. Fühlen die Seele noch nicht gänzlich aus, right? So they don't completely fill or satisfy, we might say, to use the language that we had earlier in the Prolegomena, Befriedigung, right? Or Befrieden in verbal form. Noch nicht, not yet in a way, or aren't there, gänzlich, not completely. And actually, for Kant, these things will never entirely fill the soul. That's why we have metaphysics. Metaphysics goes beyond. It satisfies a desire that can be partly satisfied and addressed by these other bodies of knowledge or discipline or sciences, but can't be completely satisfied by them. So this is really quite important, right? He says that there is a space, a realm, left over for pure and speculative reason, which is what metaphysics is, not just doing, using, but also about. It's reason applied to itself. And he talks about this as having an emptiness, a leere, an empty space, something that we saw once again discussed in part 3 of this, which had to do with how metaphysics is even possible. And this came up in terms of metaphysics, exercise of reason, being able to give to itself and recognize boundaries, Grenzen, right? So this is a very important idea. We're going to always have to do metaphysics. Now, if we don't do critical metaphysics, then what's going to happen? He says this emptiness prompts us to seek in vagaries, buffoonery, and mysticism. Now, the terms here are kind of funny. So the order is actually a little bit different in the original German. Fratzen, buffoonery, literally means like making faces, grimacing, right? You might say, well, how the hell do you do that in metaphysics? Well, I don't know. That's an interesting metaphor. Vagaries or trifling around, Tindelwerk, fooling around with things that don't really matter. And then the most interesting term yet, because it's going to appear at the end of this section, mysticism. Schwärmerei, right? Now, this doesn't just mean mysticism, and Kant doesn't use a cognate term, mysticism, which he could have used. He uses this other term, which means also enthusiasm or, you know, getting worked up about stuff. So it could be mysticism in the sense of pretension to like insights that other people don't have. It could also be just like getting yourself all worked up in church and having the spirit in you or something like that. Kant is very distrustful of that. Why? Because it has a completely subjective basis. And people will claim to have all sorts of mystical and metaphysical ecstasies. That's another way of translating Schwärmerei, by the way, ecstasy. When, you know, maybe they do, but nobody else can verify it in any way, right? So they use that to try to claim some sort of competence that other people don't have. And so he says, the emptiness of this space prompts us to seek in vagaries, buffooneries, and mysticism for what seems to be employment, use, and entertainment, but which is actually a mere pastime undertaken in order to deaden the troublesome voice of reason, which in accordance with its nature requires something that can satisfy it and does not merely subserve other ends or the, as he's going to put it, I love this phrase, interests of our inclinations, Interesse der Neigungen, right? And if you've read other works of Kant, for example, the later on moral works, right? The second critique, the groundwork for the metaphysics of morals. Notice we've got metaphysics there. Neigungen, inclinations, play a major role, not in guiding us rightly, but in actually leading us astray. So when reason doesn't have something like a critique that Kant says he's providing, or at least the outlines of it, critique of pure reason, prolegomena to any future metaphysics, it is going to inevitably try to satisfy that desire that it has for something that goes beyond these other disciplines in ways that get it in trouble. If we wanted to be a little facetious here, we could talk about that old song of looking for love in all the wrong places. Reason itself, Kant doesn't talk about love here, but reason itself has a desire, has something that it's seeking out. And if it doesn't find it in the right places, it's going to find it in the wrong places. So Kant is giving us a caution here and also clarifying how the use of reason on itself, theoretical and speculative and pure, you could say, how that in metaphysics can go astray. So that's a very interesting point. And then he talks about the Germans and how, you know, the Germans can carry things further than other nations. And then he says, if this opinion be well founded, then an opportunity, a task presents itself. And, you know, so he's proposing something for his fellow Germans, German speakers, right? Because there is no Germany at the time as a political entity, but German has become a philosophical language by this point. And so he says, well, you know, what we can do is carry on something with metaphysics. And then he tells us something interesting about metaphysics. He says that this science is of such a special kind, besondere Art, right, in German, that it can all at once be brought to completion, which we've seen him talk a lot about, and to that permanent state beyond which it can never be developed. It'll have reached a final structure, orientation, right? Now, does that mean that it can't have any further working out? He says, you can have adornment by greater clearness in some place or additional utility, but you can actually finish metaphysics as a system. So, as a side note, people like to joke around about completing the system of German idealism. Well, that's part of what Kant was actually talking about here, sketching it out ahead of time, not using exactly those terms, but it can be brought to completion. And then he says it's got this advantage that no other science has or could have. Not just no other science has this. Metaphysics is unique in this way. What is it? And he lists three different things that are connected with each other. None is so completely isolated and independent, unabhängig, of others, being non-dependent upon what others provide. Let's pause on that for a moment and go back to thinking about these other things. History, dependent on books, right? Secular books. Jurisprudence, dependent on law books. Mathematics, dependent upon itself. So there's a little bit of interest there. Natural science and medicine, dependent on mathematics and on experience. Matters of taste, also dependent presumably on experience, but also the examples of the ancients. Metaphysics is not dependent on any of these. It's only dependent upon itself, which means that it's independent, right? And what is the other part? Exclusively concerned with the faculty of cognition, pure and simple. All of the things are concerned with the faculty of cognition because they're using the faculty of cognition, but metaphysics is looking at, and if we want to talk about the faculty of cognition, it's really looking at all the faculties of cognition, you know, sensibility, understanding, reason, how these all fit together. So that's a unique advantage of metaphysics. And then finally, he's going to bring this whole work to a close by talking about metaphysics and theology. What does he say? He talked about a service, a dienst, which metaphysics performs for theology, making it independent of the judgment of dogmatic speculation. So meaning that people can't complain about it or criticize it because it's engaging in dogmatic speculation and securing it completely against the attack of all such opponents. Ordinary metaphysics, though it promised theology much advantage, couldn't keep this promise. The metaphysics that isn't really metaphysics is a science, and by summoning speculative dogmatics to its assistance, did nothing but arm enemies against itself. And then he brings up, once again, mysticism. Schwemmerei, right? And again, let's remind ourselves, it's not just mysticism in the old classic sense. It is enthusiasm. It is ecstasy. It is this subjective, I have a experience that you don't have, therefore I'm better suited to talk about God or the angels or pick whatever else you want, right? And he says, mysticism in a rationalistic age can prosper only when it hides itself behind a system of school metaphysics. We're going to get rid of that stuff through critique. And then there's nowhere to hide this mysticism in theology. And then he says, it's driven from theology. And now notice this, what Kant says, its last hiding place. Theology is the place that mysticism, enthusiasm, ecstasy can still hold out until critique comes at it. Where's that critique going to happen? Well, Kant actually has a whole book that you can read called Religion Within the Limits of Reason Alone, which tells you about that. I mean, it's also there in, you know, the first critique and in the second critique and also parts of the third critique as well. But Kant is engaging in this Enlightenment rationalistic project of saying, we're not going to do that sort of stuff. We're not going to rely on mysticism or mere subjective feelings or dogmatic commitments about religion. And then he says, it's driven from its hiding place by critical philosophy. And so theology, or what's left of it after all the mysticism has been driven out and dogmatism, will actually be a science for Kant, like metaphysics can be a science. And it's not going to be like what he was talking about earlier, just this thing that's dependent on sacred books. It's going to be a rationalistic exercise thinking about the nature of the divine. So that's an interesting transformation. And I will close this by suggesting that. So Kant is talking at the very end about theology and the service that metaphysics can perform in relation to it. Maybe, now Kant doesn't say this, but maybe we could think of this question. Would metaphysics, a critical metaphysics, the kind that Kant is advancing, perform similar services to these other disciplines? History, natural science, medicine, jurisprudence, matters of taste, mathematics, morality. Isn't that what Kant does, at least with some of these, in his other works? So this is the end of Kant's prolegomena to any future metaphysics. We see what metaphysics is supposed to do in relation to these other sciences and bodies of knowledge. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.